Welcome again to Through the Word. Today, Mark chapter 8, as we come to the heart of the gospel and the core of Christianity. We've been tagging along with Christ and his disciples for several chapters now, but in Mark 8, Jesus cuts to the chase. It's decision time. Two things matter here, two questions at the very core of what it means to be a Christian. Who is Jesus, and what does it take to follow him? We start at verse 27. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" Jesus opens the conversation with an easy question. What do other people say? Really, this is where any of us starts when we're trying to figure out what we believe. We start with what we've heard, what we've been taught. That doesn't mean it's right, but it's a sensible starting place. So, what do people say about Jesus? Well, the disciples give a few answers they've heard. Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, still others one of the prophets. You know, it's actually pretty fascinating to find out what people say today about Jesus, even among non-Christians. Just try asking them. I read a great article in Newsweek some years ago. It was called The Other Jesus. Kenneth Woodward compiled a great summary of how other faiths see Jesus. Jews today are mixed about Jesus. Some see him as a good Jew, a rabbi, and a reformer in Judaism, while many see Jesus as a heretic and apostate. And of course, many Jews have become Christians, just as the first disciples. Now, Muslims honor Jesus as a great prophet of Allah. Jesus is the son of Mary, the only woman mentioned by name in the Quran. That's pretty interesting. Jesus is sinless, born of a virgin, worked miracles, ascended into heaven without dying. Jesus is the anointed one, Messiah. Now, that's a lot. Even Muhammad didn't do all of that. Strike up a conversation about Jesus with a Muslim, and you might be surprised. However, Muslims do not believe that Jesus is God's son. They also believe that Jesus asked God to save him from the crucifixion, and God answered by taking Jesus directly to heaven. What about Hindus? What do they say about Jesus? There's a strong tradition in India that Jesus traveled across Southeast Asia as a teenager, learned yogic meditation, and returned home to become a guru to the Jews. Hindus have hundreds of thousands of gods, so most have little issue with Jesus being one of them, just not the only one. Buddhists find a lot in common between Buddha and Jesus, especially in the teaching of compassion and selflessness. Many Buddhists regard Jesus as an enlightened being, even a sort of brother to Buddha. However, Buddhists do not believe in a god, and sin is not a Buddhist concept, only karma. So there are a lot of ideas out there about Jesus, mostly positive. But back here in Mark 8, Jesus doesn't leave the question there. In verse 29, "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" So now it gets personal. For faith to mean anything, it has to get personal. It's not enough to rattle off what everyone else is saying. Who do you say I am? First question was for the mind. This one goes to the mind and the heart. It's decision time. And Peter makes his decision in verse 29. Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. Then in verse 31, he then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and after 3 days, rise again. So Jesus lays it all out, plain as day. No parables or metaphors here. Because Jesus is the Messiah, he has to suffer. He will be killed and rise again. I wonder if Jesus shared the prophecies in the Old Testament. The crucifixion is in the Jewish Bible, if you know where to look. Isaiah 53, "He was pierced through for our transgressions." Zechariah 12, "They will look on me, the one they have pierced." God says that. "They will look on me, the one they pierced." Psalm 22 is a graphic picture of the cross long before crucifixion was invented. So Jesus lays it out. It is his destiny, and he wants the disciples to know what's coming. But in verse 32, he spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. It is interesting that Peter takes issue with the cross. When you do have a conversation about Jesus with someone of another faith, ask them what they think of the cross. Back to that Newsweek article, Woodward says this, "Clearly, the cross is what separates the Christ of Christianity from every other Jesus." See, Muslims reject the cross as an affront to Allah himself, who would never allow one of his prophets to be killed. Hindus hold on to a Jesus as a yogi who passes into peaceful samadhi and escapes the degradation of death. For Buddhists who don't believe in sin, the cross is just cruel. And when Jesus told the disciples about the cross and his future, Peter voiced the same ideas. Far be it from you, Jesus. Verse 33. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. First thing to see here is Peter's not perfect. He got it really right, then really wrong. Following Jesus, you make mistakes, and so do your leaders. But how did Peter get this so wrong? His mind was set on human concerns rather than God's concerns. It's the same thinking that led the Pharisees so far from God. Human thinking says the good guy always wins. God makes sure of it, right? All good dogs go to heaven. And every human religion in the world is built on God rewarding good guys and punishing bad guys. Or karma does it. Either way, it's justice, righteousness. Yet this is what sets Jesus apart. Jesus lived righteous. He would have great karma, but he died a sinner's death. Why is the cross so hard? Well, apart from the blood and gore, it also says a lot about God, that God would love sinners, that the Son of God would trade his death for a sinner's life. That same article quotes a Buddhist who describes the crucified Christ as a very painful image. It does not contain joy or peace, and this does not do justice to Jesus. It's an ironic statement. No justice to Jesus. It's true. It wasn't fair to Jesus. It was God's justice on you and I. But Jesus took it. Jesus wants this clear to everyone. Life will not be fair to Jesus, and it will not be fair to Christians. In verse 34, then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Jesus lays it out. If you want to follow Jesus, memorize this verse. This is the cost. Count it carefully. Is it worth it? To follow Jesus, deny yourself. You can't do it. It's not about how good you are. You cannot save yourself. You need Christ. Take up your cross. There's a burden. There is a sacrifice. Life will not be fair to you. And follow. Where Jesus leads, you follow. Verse 35. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? I love that verse. You know what Jesus is saying? He's saying that your soul is worth more than the whole world. So let go of the world and hold on to Jesus. For him, your soul was worth dying for. So what is it worth to you? As for me, I wasted a lot of years content to leave faith to other people. They believe this and they believe that, and I respect them. But there did come a day when God wanted a decision. You know, there's a big difference between believing in marriage and being married. And there's a big difference between believing something about Jesus and following Jesus. The difference is commitment. It's sacrifice. In short, the difference is your life. So, what about you? Who do you say Jesus is?
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.